this is Mary J. Blige.
I'm Nicki Minaj.
What's up? This is Jay-Z.
From London, England and Washington, D.C., you are now tuned in to Conversations with Allison J. The Journey to Here, brought to you by Ethel May Books. This is Conversations with Allison J. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. Today, as always, we have another captivating and thought-provoking topic and guest. Here's your host, Allison J.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. I'm your host, Allison J. Today, I'm delighted to welcome our guest, Stephanie Phillips. Stephanie is passionate about raising awareness for childless, not by choice. After realizing that there was no national recognition of the community, she decided to start World Childless Week, which started in 2017. World Childless Week gives a voice to the childless community. It's an online event to raise awareness and support the childless, not by choice. In its initial week in September 2017, hashtag World Childless Week was tweeted 1.2 million times, according to Twitter analytics. In 2018, World Childless Week reached 85 countries, again, according to website Geography Analytics. In the year of 2020, World Childless Week took place with each day exploring a different element of being childless. Our stories, letters about forgiveness, using art to release emotions, men matter too, how we have empathy, finding our worth in society, and how to move forwards. Stephanie was inspired to start World Childless Week after recognizing the need for a global campaign that supports those who are childless, not by choice. Stephanie, thank you for joining us here on Conversations with Allison J. Welcome. It is an absolute pleasure to have you.
You're welcome. No, thanks for such a lovely introduction. And it's good that you're giving me the opportunity to talk about, as you say, what I'm passionate about, which is raising awareness about the childless, not by choice community.
Yes. And it's something that if you haven't been touched by it, I don't think you would recognize or realize just how valuable this platform that you have created is. So, Stephanie, you know a little bit about my journey with infertility and as to why I also am passionate about those that are childless, not by choice. But please tell us your story and your journey to starting World Childless Week.
Yeah, certainly. I'd say my childless journey sort of started, so the realisation of it is when I sort of was in my late 20s. And my brother was suddenly going to have his first child. And I remember being ecstatic and excited and cheering with him and everything else like that. And then coming off the phone and crying my eyes out because I wanted to be where he was.
Mm.
And I suddenly realised it really impacted me. I'd suddenly hit that wave of, oh my God, am I going to be a mum? If so, when, how, what, where, and all these questions. But I toddled on, as you do, because life goes on for a few years. And eventually, in my early 30s, met what would become my husband-to-be. He was about 4 years younger than me. So we went out, we spent a few years enjoying life, as you do. You're getting to know each other, deciding if this is the person you want to be with. Because I'd sort of always grown up with the, I want to get married, I want to have a house, I want to have 2.4 children. Because that's what I sort of... that's what I grew up with, that's what I saw on TV, that's what I saw, you know, around me, and it is what I wanted. I knew at a very young age that I wanted to be a mum. I'd seen my family get together at Christmas, at Easter, at May Day, have parties, go out on picnics, and I imagined that would be the scenario, that I would go up in the family as the mum, then the grandmum, and that would be my role in life, and I looked forward to it. I was excited by it. So I did, as I said, met my husband in my early 30s. And it took us a few years to realise that, yes, we trusted enough with each other to see that the other person was who we wanted to have a child with. Okay. We both spent a lot of time sort of, is this person good enough to be a parent? Because, you know, yeah, I had relationships before, but it was a case of, oh, no, there's no way. I like this guy, I'm happy to be with him, but I don't want him to be the father of my child.
Right,
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
Yeah, definitely all been there. So time went on, and it we decided eventually that yes, we wanted to try and have a family. By this time, I'd already gone past 35, and I didn't realise, I knew that my fertility would be going downhill. I didn't know that at 35 it had basically gone running, jumping off a cliff and landed at the bottom somewhere. So odds were against us straight away. We tried for a couple of years, eventually sort of said, we've got to go to the doctors, we need to get tested. So we went for the tests, both of us individually. And we sat there in a hospital room with a consultant who was very quiet, very timid, very shy, looking down at the desk, fleeting glances towards us, not wanting to look us in the eyes. You just think, this is uncomfortable, this doesn't feel good.
Yeah,
she really did seem incredibly nervous, as if it was the first time she had to give somebody bad news.
Wow.
It felt like she'd literally come off training that day. And the sentence that she said was, if he manages to get you pregnant, it's highly unlikely that you'll basically stay pregnant. You know what I mean? So one, he's highly unlikely to get me pregnant. And two, I'm highly unlikely to keep pregnancy.
Yeah.
And she left it with a sort of a what and an and an air in the air. She didn't really finish the sentence. So I knew at that moment we had a sort of double whammy institute that we were both had problems to rectify.
Right.
She said, go away. We'll call you again in 6 months and make an appointment for you. But in that time period, you need to go away and lose weight. Fair enough, I knew that. I was overweight then, not as much as I am now, but I was overweight. And I think the first thing you must do is think, okay, am I going to lose enough weight? What is the criteria? So I went home, I thought about it. At this point in time, I was already 39 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the cutoff for the free IVF in the UK was at 40. So by the time the 6 months went, I'd probably have 5 months before my 40th birthday. And I thought, well, how long is it going to be that I'm going to have to wait for that appointment to see somebody?
Right.
What's the waiting list time? How long do I have to take meds for and do more tests for before they actually go ahead with any processes? Because I know it's not a straightforward, oh yeah, we'll book you in tomorrow, we'll get it all done.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave up at that point because I knew the waiting list. I knew the time periods. I knew that they might go, you still haven't lost enough weight, come again. You know what I mean? And there was so many, I could see so many negatives to it not happening. And I've heard horror stories since of people literally being in the hospital about to have, you know, the first part of IVF happen, been lying on the bed, and somebody's gone, oh, was it your birthday today? And they've gone, yes. And they've gone, so you're 40 today? And they've gone, yes. And they said, I'm sorry, we can't carry out the procedure.
Sorry. The person
literally
in the appointment on the bed.
On the bed, about to go through IVF, the start of it, and been told because it was their birthday that day, they wouldn't carry out the procedure.
My goodness.
Yeah, there's some real horrific stories out there. But I had, even before I knew this, in my head I was working things out, and I just thought, I can't see it happening. I don't see it happening. So I literally sort of went home and went to the one support system that I knew was there, which was food, because I was a comfort eater.
Okay, yeah.
And so when they called in 6 months' time, said, do you want to book an appointment? I thought, well, there you go. It's less than 5 months. You're telling me to book an appointment. What's that going to be, a month or 2 months away? And then I just knew, and I cancelled it, and I said no. So that was like the time for me when I knew that we wouldn't have children.
And I'm just astounded at the doctor that you went to see, just how it's very shocking.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually heard of another young lady that I spoke to that had issues with conceiving. She actually went on to have two children. But when her and her husband were trying to have their second child, they had run into some problems. And they went to see a doctor. And the way that the doctor spoke to her, because as far as that doctor was concerned, she shouldn't even have been able to have had her first son.
Gosh, yeah.
And so the doctor kept asking her, is she sure that she has, honestly? And as she was saying that to me, I'm thinking to myself, hold on a second. As a physician, surely there should be some sort of compassion, empathy, just something at the kind of news that you are delivering to people. It shouldn't be a conversation like, well, if he manages to get you pregnant.
No.
Because for your husband, that was possibly the first, I mean, for you and your husband, was that not the first time you were hearing that both of you, or if, or either of you, could have a problem conceiving?
Yeah. Like you say, to be told that,
like
you're sort
that.
Of sitting there. And the thing is, what I'll say as well, it's not just that. It's the fact that you have to go to a wing in a hospital that is a maternity ward. You have to sit in the room, and it was a small room surrounded by people all sitting there rubbing their big bellies full of beautiful babies. And when they first called my name, we both got up, and she went, no, I've just got to weigh Steph first. And I sort of carried on to go out the room. It was like, no, the scales are there in the waiting room, the very small waiting room. You've got to get on those scales in front of everybody. And then, embarrassed as that was, you have to then go and sit back down and wait again to be called. Mm-hmm. And then to be told he's not, you know, highly unlikely he'll get you pregnant if you fall pregnant. And it's highly unlikely you'll carry full term. And then just leaving that sentence drifting there. So... yeah, I could see your face in your shop. But the sad thing is, there are so many people that have gone through similar or even worse situations, and they're hidden, they're not seen. This, what I'd say is that miscarriage is still a taboo subject.
Yeah.
To talk about.
Yeah.
And if we can't open up the discussion about miscarriage, how can we ever think of going to the next stage, which is childlessness?
Mm.
It's almost stages that we need to get miscarriage up, you know, there in conversation. And then we can go on to childlessness, which is obviously not always, or not the majority of the time, related to infertility.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a next stage of the taboo subject that needs to be opened.
And that's very true, because to your point, in my case, it wasn't a case of infertility.
Mm.
It was a case of I couldn't carry, because of having a condition called adenomyosis. And thanks to Gabrielle Union, she's made it a little famous now. But so I've gotten pregnant before, more than once, 3 times, in fact. However, none of them went very far because I couldn't carry. And I didn't find this out until I was in my 40s. When I actually found this out. And it's because a friend of mine, because when it was my monthly cycle, they were horrendous. It was just, they were really bad. They put me in hospital several times. And a friend of mine says, demand a laparoscopy. Didn't know what that was. And I'm like, okay. So when I went, and I was over here in the US by this time. So when I went and I says, can I have a laparoscopy? The way that the doctor behaved, and I'm thinking, hold on a second. This is not like in the UK where it's going to come out of their budget.
Yeah.
This is something where here I'm paying for it. I have insurance. And so I'm going to be paying for this. So if I've asked you for one and you know my medical history, why am I met with this attitude from a gynecologist? And so he eventually, because I said to him, because I'm tired of this thing putting me in the hospital, that's why.
Yeah.
Eventually, and he's the one that performed the laparoscopy, and he said to me, oh, you have adenomyosis. So what is that? Because I'd never heard of it. I've heard of endometriosis, but I've never heard of adenomyosis. What is that? And he explained it very briefly. The majority of information I have about it is because I researched it myself. And so he says, but you've got 2 choices. And I'm like, no, he says, you two have 2 options. That's it. So I was like, okay, there's options. And he says, your options are either have a hysterectomy or learn to live with it.
Thank you. Yeah, very generous. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just thought, those are my options. Those are my choices. That's not a choice. Those are not options. So I thought, okay. So I went away feeling like, as you can imagine, the wind completely taken out of my sails. And by this time, I hadn't been married very long. So because before then, I hadn't deliberately been trying because I wasn't married. I got married at 40. And I was probably about 43 by the time of this diagnosis.
Yeah.
And it was just a case of, oh, Okay. And I started to look into it, and I tried alternative medicines. I tried acupuncture and different things, and unfortunately it didn't work. So to your point about miscarriage, yeah, because it was one of those things where you don't want to talk about it. And because you haven't carried to term, people don't understand that you are also grieving.
Yeah.
And that you're going through a whole emotional and psychological just roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're hit with a blank wall because there are no answers. There's no solutions.
Mm.
And like with you, this is, you know, it's like, oh, you can do this, you can do that. But neither of them were rosy. None of them were giving positives. They're just basically saying, you know, your choices are not good choices, mm. but these are the choices you've got.
Yeah.
You know, they're not giving you any hope or anything.
Mm.
And yeah, it that's the problem. Is the business, obviously, as well, is all about helping you conceive. That's where money can be made.
Mm.
You know, if it's not natural through the NHS, that we're looking in the UK, that people do get more help. But if it's IVF, it's a money-making business. It's not there to tell you the real statistics of how low your chances are of conceiving. It's just a case of, let's get you in the door. Let's help you. Let's do mm-hmm. this. Let's mm-hmm. plant that rosy image. And like you say, when you haven't got that rosy image, all the doors shut because nobody can help you. Nobody can fund you. But we deserve to have that acknowledgement of what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
It's bloody painful. And it is a grief. It's a disenfranchised grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely hard for people to understand that if you've not physically born a child, that you can actually grieve it. But you're grieving. What I say to a lot of people is, if you'll sometimes see on social media, on Facebook, somebody will have lost their parents, and each year they'll put up a, I wish my mum or my dad was here today, it's their birthday, I wish they were with us for Christmas. And people can understand, and they relate, because that person was living, they probably had a similar relationship, and they understand. But what they're actually grieving is the loss of the future dreams.
Mm.
And what we're doing is the same. We're losing, we've lost those dreams, and that's what we're grieving, is the dreams we had,
mm-hmm.
of what we can see as well, what's going on with people our similar age who've had children. And we can see all the first that they're, you know, that they're experiencing, the first walk, the first tooth, the first day at school.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, the days at school pictures, gosh, they go on forever. But, you know, but all these firsts they're experiencing. We want to experience them, but we can't. And then you might have somebody suddenly call out in the street you're walking by, the name to their child, and that name might be the name you chose for your unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll never be able to say out loud and call them, because your children don't exist.
Yeah,
they exist in your heart and in your head, but because they don't physically exist, people can't understand. Mm-hmm. But what I say to people is, if you can grieve somebody who's on this earth, and when they pass, you can grieve the 10, 20, 30 years that they're not with you, because the dreams you expected to have with mm-hmm. them, then you've got to understand those dreams are the same as what we're having for our unborn children.
Yeah. And again, to your point, now that you've mentioned that, something else just came to me. It's just that for those women that have miscarried and they started to feel the beginnings of that pregnancy, their body changing, and they start to make plans and they start to live in that hope and that expectation. So when that is, in some cases, feels like it's ripped away from you, you really should be given that voice to be able to grieve, process, and go through those emotions. And also, like you're saying, if somebody was to, God forbid, lose a child, that was born and lose a child, they grieve the fact that, like you were saying, the first tooth, first day at school, the first school picture, and school, high school, college, marriage, they're able to be able to say, wow, I'm never going to see those things. I'm never going to experience that. And really, it really is the same for those that have had a miscarriage, isn't it?
Yeah. And the things, like you say, it's whether you have a miscarriage or not, because within the childless community, you'll get people going, I wish I'd had the experience of being pregnant, so I could just say I'd felt the child within me. Mm. And then you'll have people who have been pregnant, so I wish I'd never felt that child within me, because the pain of losing it is so hard. So this pain, excuse me, there's pain on both sides.
Yeah.
And because we're still imagining the other person might have had something we didn't have, mm-hmm. and we'd like to experience that, even knowing the pain, we'd like to experience it. And we're saying, like, when do you start grieving a child that you've lost? If you've lost one in infancy, you've lost one in pregnancy, or is it before? Because you plan that child before you get pregnant. So you're already planning, mm-hmm. you're already dreaming ahead if you're, when you're trying to conceive. Or you might even plan it years before that, when you're just thinking, when I get married, I'm going to try for my child. And how many of us pick out names in our teens or in our 20s?
Mm-hmm.
How many of us start collecting things? I had my first house in my late 20s. I was going out buying stuff ready for picnics, as in family gatherings and mm-hmm. parties, because that's what I envisioned my future to be. So we can't say to people, don't dream, because it might not happen. We don't want to say that to them. We want people to have their dreams, if that's children or not, whatever they want is what we hope for each other. But those dreams start a lot earlier than the moment the child's born.
And
that's what people sort of tend to forget.
Yes. And is it that people tend to forget, or it's just something that until it happens, you don't realize that's what you were doing? You know, you were subconsciously doing things. You were subconsciously, because as you and I were saying earlier, unless you have a medical condition that you're aware of as you're growing up, you don't stop to think that if you want to have children, you're not going to be able to. There's those that don't want, and that's fine. But you just think that that's just the natural progression of life, isn't it? You go through life and then you meet somebody, you get married, then you build your home and you have your children. You don't stop to think that that's not going to be your reality until it is your reality.
Yeah. It scares me now that so many people think, I can freeze my eggs and I can have children later. It's not a guarantee. It's not a great success rate. There's a lot of people who are freezing eggs and then finding out it doesn't work because the eggs haven't frozen properly, or they don't defrost properly. And that's before you even try and actually conceive at a later age, when your body might not want to conceive because it's older. And we're getting under the pretense again of these people who can make money out of us, of thinking, yeah, it's okay, I can do that when I want to do it. And it's not to scare people, but it's just to say it doesn't always happen. We can't always assume what we think will happen, as you say. So IVF's not a guarantee. Surrogacy is not a guarantee. Freezing your eggs is not a guarantee. Adoption is certainly not a guarantee, even though people seem to think that's the number one get-out clause. Oh, you're childless, just adopt, you know. Two for one down the shop, yeah. But, you know, it's just... Yeah, life isn't as easy for some of us that we wish it would be.
Yeah.
And it is just sort of saying that, for those of us who wanted children and who don't get that dream to come true,
mm-hmm.
just try and maybe recognise that we have got a pain in our hearts. We are grieving. We're allowed to grieve. Mm-hmm. It is a grief. And if we want to talk about it, we'll talk about it. But at the same time, don't push us, because like any grief, we've got to be in the right mindset. We've got to be in the right place of acceptance or embracing it. Whatever the word you want to choose, because everybody has to use the words that they feel suit them. But we have to feel comfortable to answer the questions, not just open up and talk as and when it suits a parent.
Yeah, that is so true. And it's interesting that you say about these things are not guaranteed, because I don't think people go into them realizing just how much of a guarantee it is not. It's just the assumption that it's going to work. Like you said, IVF, freezing your egg, surrogacy. And the funny thing about that is when I ended up not by choice having to have a hysterectomy, because I was having to have blood transfusions and so on. And then I realized, oh my goodness, I am literally dying to have a baby. So it was a case of, and then they were saying, even if you got pregnant, it could be fatal for you to be able to carry it medically. So I thought, so eventually I gave in and I did that. And then because it was a partial, it was like, oh, you still got your ovaries, freeze your eggs. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, by the time I had this, I was already past my mid 40s, right?
Yeah.
So the quality of the eggs, the volume, I don't know. But then I thought, okay, I'm going to look into it, because some very, very dear to my heart people, some friends and said, I'll be a surrogate for you. So I thought, okay, well, if that's an option, I'm going to look into it. So first things first, let me look into the freezing of the eggs and so on. When I saw the cost, I immediately shut down the website. The cost of just freezing the eggs, not the whole rest of the surrogacy.
Everything that follows afterwards,
yeah. Just the cost of doing that and the process of doing that. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I could physically or financially, for that matter, put myself through that. And then when I took out the physical and aspect and the financial aspect, and I thought, what would that do to me mentally?
Yeah, it's the emotional aspect is the biggest one almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just decided, like, and then again, like you said, some people think that, and the fact of, because this is what I wanted to ask you about, the judgment and the shame that people seem to throw our way because we don't have any children, thinking that we just got up one day and said, that's it, I'm not having any. And they're not realizing the heartache that is going on behind the scenes that nobody sees. And so it's just a case of, well, if you wanted children that bad, you would just adopt, wouldn't you? You would just adopt. And like you said, it's like, okay, hang on a second. I'm just going to pop down the shops and I'll pick a couple of children up from down there, all right? Because it's that easy, all right? I'll just adopt. And I'm not saying that's not an option. It may well be an option for some. And I know people that have adopted and they're absolutely loving it. I know somebody that has adopted two children and adopted them from they were babies, and they are beautiful children, and she is a mother in every way, shape or form. That is her reality. That's how it happened for her, and it's great. But that's not everybody's reality, is it? And it's not everybody's choice or desire after the heartache of what they've gone through to even adopt, is it?
That's it, because as you say, it's automatically given as the number one option. If you're childless, go and adopt. I've had people say a few months ago online, say to me, well, if you chose not to adopt, then you chose not to have children, so you're child-free. And I'm like, no. And as the conversation went on, she let out some information to me, and I thought, oh, my goodness. So I won't go into that. It's very long-winded. But her conception, our idea of adoption was for me, was not what she actually believed in when it came to herself and her principles for her family. It was a very twisted thing, but I thought, you can't tell me I am child-free by choice or childless by choice because I didn't adopt, because you don't know somebody's circumstances. Mm-hmm. Adoption is a calling. It's something you want to do, whether you're a parent or you're childless. You want to do adoption. It's not a replacement. Children should never be a replacement or a second best. And that's the thing. If you want to adopt, you will adopt, or you will look at the opportunity and see if you get accepted, if you're good enough. You're in America, if you've got enough money. There's so many things. But the thing is, if you've tried to conceive and you can't, your body or possibly your husband's body or both of your bodies have let you down. Mm-hmm. And you feel your own shame, your own stigma. From that, you feel embarrassed. You don't want to talk about it, which is why it's not discussed. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to tell anybody you couldn't do what you feel like every other single woman in the world could do.
Or what, the thing that your body's, the one natural thing your body's supposed to do, right?
Yeah. Well, like for me, I thought, hang on a minute. I started my periods when I was 11. They only finished last year because of a hysterectomy. But all that time, there was a monthly reminder. Your body's not working. And why are you reminding me? Why are you doing this to me?
Thank you.
Why are you causing me grief for all these years? You know, why are you doing it to me? What's the point of having a period if you're not going to actually work?
Mm.
But like I said, for adoption, it's got to be something you want to do in your heart, not as a replacement. There are people who are childless to go on to adopt, and like you said, it works out wonderfully. And it's fantastic to see that. I've seen friends do the same myself. And it's wonderful to see their bond grow. And because they are parents then. Mm-hmm. When you adopt, you're a parent. It's just a different way. It doesn't matter whether it's biological or not, you're their parent. But it's got to be your choice, not something imposed on somebody. And people have to remember that if you feel ashamed or embarrassed or let down by your body, whatever the reason, you've got to then mentally prepare yourself in the UK for a panel that might say, you're not good enough to adopt.
Mm.
So your body's let you down, and you've told yourself internally you're not good enough. And then you're going to get actually told, probably by a panel of parents, that you're not good enough to adopt.
My goodness.
So you think about it that way, or in America, yeah. You can't afford to adopt. But the process of interviewing ex-partners and friends and colleagues, and everybody is judging you, whether you are good enough to adopt. Whether your house has got enough bedrooms and whether, you know, all the little things. And you think, hang on a minute. If you can actually give birth naturally and you can give birth year after year after year, doesn't matter how many bedrooms you've got, doesn't matter if you're in a council house or if you've all it yourself. You can have 10 kids in a 3-bed house. Nobody's going to blink because you conceive them naturally.
Mm-hmm.
There's other people who have got a 2-bed house and they're told the second bedroom's too small to have a child in. It's like, well, why is it classified as a bedroom? It's obviously big enough for somebody to sleep in. The rest of the house is for them to live in. But you're telling me it's not big enough and therefore I can't adopt. And there's all these other little reasons that you can be turned down.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of mental pressure to put yourself through.
Mm-hmm.
But then it could be a case of, what if you've got a partner who had children before you met and they don't want to adopt with you? What if you've got a partner who doesn't want to adopt and you want to adopt? There's so many different scenarios.
Yeah.
And if somebody says, why, if you consider adoption, and stops asking questions, they're prying into a very personal matter.
Very true.
And you don't want to answer. These are personal matters, private matters that are from you and your partner, not for a stranger or even for a relative.
Yeah.
If it's going to happen, you will bring that forward in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
People don't need to ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is, you know what it's like, though, Stephanie. Sometimes when people don't know what to say, they just say dumb stuff.
There's so much
dumb stuff, don't they? And it's like, for example, if somebody has experienced a loss and somebody's died, and some of the things people say, and sometimes you think, you know what, just shut up and give me a hug if you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing here, though, isn't it? Well, people say, oh, well, you know, you can adopt. Do you know what the process is to adopt? Do you know the anguish of what it is to adopt? Do you have any idea? Like you were saying earlier, I can't just pop along to the shops, go and pick one up and say, woohoo, here's my new child. And again, it's not to substitute. And a lot of times when people are having that conversation, that's how they're making it sound, like you can't do it this way, so substitute it with this. That's not why you adopt. That's not why you then take responsibility for another life, is it? And you were mentioning about the shame and nobody wants to talk about it, because I know in my case, I didn't, because I'm just thinking, I don't know many that cannot have.
Yeah,
I know some that have chosen not to because of, for example, they're not in a committed relationship, that, or the relationship they were in was not conducive to having a child in that relationship, or just other different circumstances and reasons. So I don't actually know that many that don't because they can't. So, and I do, as I was mentioning to you before, I know women that have miscarried, and then they try to empathize with you by saying, oh, you know, I know what it feels like to have feelings of loss.
Yeah.
But then they've been able to go on to have children. So actually, no, you don't. You don't. You know what it feels like to have a miscarriage, but you don't know how I'm feeling, the fact that I cannot, when you have gone on to. Some of the things people say, just sometimes I just want to say, okay, guess what? You're not helping.
Yeah.
Go away. Leave me alone. You're not helping. It's not helping. That, like, oh, but you know, you have so many nieces and nephews and you have not helping.
Yeah.
Go away. Leave me alone. So I think it's a double whammy, though, isn't it? Because you have the internal pressure that you're probably more than likely putting on yourself and blaming yourself and kicking yourself, that why can't I? And then what other people are saying to you and seeing you as, because again, as we were talking about earlier, growing up, when we saw the lady that lived at the end of the road, the end of the street, and she either wasn't married or didn't have any children, and we would either call it she would call her the crazy cat lady or the haunted house down there because she didn't have any children, when in fact her reality could have been that she couldn't. And you mentioned on your website about women in their 70s finally having that voice because you found in World Childless Week. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, those could have been the ladies that we were looking at back then, calling them the crazy cat lady and the haunted house. When it was just like, when I read that, Stephanie, it was just like my heart just sank. For those women that in their 70s are only now finding a voice because of the platform that you have founded in World Childless Week.
And that's what we need to work to not happening anymore. I found out, like I say, so I was 39, 40, and I spent several years grieving on my own before I found a Facebook group. And it was like a whole new world, a revelation of, oh my God, these people actually understand what I'm saying, mm-hmm. what they're writing. I could write exactly the same words. And having your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, how you viewed the world, actually having somebody else say, yeah, that's how I think too. And knowing you're not alone is the way I suddenly realised, oh, actually, I'm grieving. I didn't realise I was grieving. And you get it out. The pain comes out bit by bit. And as you say, I have people trying to win the groups that I'm in, and they're in their 60s or in their 70s, and you think, they've spent their life grieving but feeling alone. And we've got to stop it. We can't allow women and men to carry on through each decade of their life, not realising the support out there and what they're feeling is completely normal and that others do feel the same, and that, yes, you can find happiness, you can live life to the full again. But for many of us, we need to find a platform somewhere, somehow, to actually let that grief out and actually analyse it and realise what it is. And, we can't keep doing this. We need to make changes now. To ensure this, that people get guided to the right support, different supports, and they can choose, that there's a lot of different supports out there, and find the one that actually works for them, the one that they think, yes, I can deal with this, this is the person I connect with.
Yeah.
Whether it be a support group, whether it be a therapist, whether it be a childless blogger, that they just understand, connect it. It doesn't matter, but it's getting the word out there for people to search, because there are options, and we don't need to go through life alone. You really don't.
And that's, is that where the champions that you have on World Childless Week come from? Because looking at it, they are based from all over the world. They're diverse ethnicities, disabilities, genders, sexual orientation. So is that why you have World Childless Week and you have these champions there with you?
The reason I had champions, and a few people who sort of were helping me out anyway in the background, but I wanted to ensure that when people came to the website, they can hopefully see a face or read somebody's bio that they relate to.
Right.
Because if they only see my face, middle-aged white woman, that doesn't do anything. Do you know what I mean? And they might just go, okay, but then she's happily married. I never found a partner. Or she's got her own house, and I haven't got my own house, so I couldn't afford to do IVF. Do you know what I mean? So it's a case of literally trying to find faces, and if not the faces, the history of what people have gone through, to make it so that everybody can see somebody they relate to. Do you know what I mean? I want to keep growing it, because it's diverse and it is amazing. The champions are wonderful. But I want more champions to represent different areas. You know, it's almost like we need this countries out there, and you don't know if anybody's doing anything to raise awareness.
Right.
And it's like we need to see if somebody in that country somewhere is raising awareness. We need to get their face on this page and say, look, there is somebody from where you come from, somebody who's got a similar background or a similar journey. Mm-hmm. And just getting that connection, I think, is the very first point of saying, okay, I might not be alone. And it's just a might not be. But then you, from that one connection, you can look at the rest of it and see that there are support groups, and I said there's therapists, there's bloggers, there's more and more of us coming out in the last few years, I think, than there ever has been. But we're still creeping out of the woodwork, because I still have people this year come to World Childless Week, and it's like, oh, I've never seen this person's blog before, because you can't. It's really hard to actually search for. You don't find a lot when you search for childless, because the word child automatically assumes you've got children, you want to look at the parent groups. No, I don't. Trust me, I don't. Do you know what I mean? It's trying to get childless recognised almost by Google and all the other search engines out there sometimes. But yeah, so the champion's aim is to, they do help me. They do mean I go back and say, right, these are the things I'm thinking of for the week. What do you think? And we mix ideas around and stuff like that. So we've had diversity this year. We've had aging without children. But we're trying to do it so each year has different topics that are all important. There's so much we can cover. We can't do it all in one week, but hopefully over the coming years. And then we'll revisit those that, you know, people want. But yeah, the champions are really there to show that we are diverse. The other thing is, every street, every town, every village, every country, every continent, there's somebody who's childless, not by choice. It's not like, oh yeah, it only hit a certain region or an area of people. That's not the case. It is worldwide, and if it hits everybody worldwide, we need to represent the world. We need to be global.
And I did recognize that when I did go on your website, to be honest with you, I saw that there was a black man from Africa. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, because, you know, if you think about it culturally, there are some countries where you do not talk about certain things, because it's a given that, especially in, because I can speak to what I know. If you think about the African cultures and the West Indian cultures, you don't really find black men. You don't find that many black women, much less black men, talking about their struggles and their journeys with infertility, especially if we look at the media, because as far as they're concerned, all black men and black women are baby mamas, and we just breed like roaches, right? But you've stopped to think, actually, that's not true. That's not accurate. Because to your point, Stephanie, we are diverse, and there's people from every country, every walk of life that has been affected by being childless and not by choice. Because if we look at the statistics you were mentioning, I was reading it and I was thinking, I had no idea, because I'm looking at the statistics. It says of the women who reached the age of 45 in 2017, 18% were childless at the end of their childbearing years, compared to 10% a generation before. So even that, so each generation, the numbers are increasing, and it's from one generation to the next, it went up by 8%. And you got that from the Office for National Statistics. And of that 18%, 10% were childless by choice. And as we've said, if it is your choice not to have children, then that's great, because everybody deserves to be able to make their own choices when it comes to having children. And another 10% were childless due to infertility. And 80% of that 18% were childless due to circumstances. So if we look at that number, only a small percent of people have chosen not to have children. So we look at 90% of that 18% are people that either wanted to have and couldn't because of infertility or by circumstances. That's staggering.
It's a big percent, and that's what people don't realise. And obviously, it's really hard to get statistics, because it's not something that people want to research into, because, as I said, there's no financial gain out of it. So why would they bother knowing? They want to know how many people are giving birth, because that's where they make their money, on all commercialism. It's rife, and it's aimed at parents. You know what I mean? We're sort of forgotten about there. And that's been, especially during lockdown, that's really been on the increase. You really see sort of prenatalism coming to the forefront even higher than normal. But yet we are probably, I say this, the biggest unrecognised minority. We're a massive minority, and we're on the increase every year, sadly. There's a lot of more people who are choosing not to have children because the planet and the environment. Being childless not by choice is on the increase. You know, people can't ignore us continually. because there's going to get a point in time where, I think it was in Australia, the same over the next few years, more people when they reach a certain age or more family units than that, as a male and a female, or a female, whatever, not a family with children, because family, can I just say that? Family can be just two people or one person and a dog. Mm-hmm. I don't like the family has to have children involved. Mm-hmm. But in Australia, they're saying it's going to get a point where it's actually going to be more people who are childless than there are with her parents. So they're going to have to take notice and realise that things are going to have to change, because we are here and we exist. We're getting louder. And because we're growing so much, we can't be ignored. And the statistics in some countries are a lot higher. It varies throughout the world, but in some countries, those who are childless are a lot higher. But on average, you can sort of say 20 to 25%. And Robin Hadley, who's one of the World Child Sweet Champions and has done a lot of research into male childlessness, he has said that he believes, from the research he's done, that there are more childless men than there are women, but the percentage is probably more around 25%.
Wow, Stephanie, I would never have thought that. That's because, as I was saying to you earlier, though, I'm really keen to speak to men about certain subjects like infertility, like mental health, like just a lot of things, because if we wanted to speak to a subject matter expert, a woman, on anything, we can find one all day, every day. But speaking to men, and thank you, because that leads next into the next question that I wanted to ask you about, when you mentioned, because one of the things in World Childless Week this week were men matter too.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask you about that. And is the reason why you decided to have that this year, because the voices of men are not heard, but yet look at the statistics.
Yeah. No, it's very much, obviously, people a lot of the time assume that the reason we don't have children is because it's fertility, which is obviously not the reason for the vast majority of us. Mm-hmm. But then they ultimately assume, on top of that, that it's down to the female, which is not
the case. You can get pregnant.
Yeah, there's something wrong with her. Do you know what I mean? So it's quite often assumed, and I say that if you go back to going back in time to tribes and things like that, if the woman didn't get pregnant, it was never assumed it was the man. The man just takes on another wife and another wife. And hang on a minute, he's got 10 wives and they're still not pregnant. Perhaps it could be the man, but the men...
Common denominator, right?
We still get the blame in general. Not always, but in general. But the statistics are that, you know, It's equally a likely chance as the problem is going to be down to the man, as it is the female. It's not higher ratio on either side. It's equal. But, yeah, as you say, to get men to speak out is incredibly hard. And I didn't want them, because I have the daily topics throughout the week each year, I didn't want them to think, oh, one, I don't want to come forward, but if I do come forward, I don't really want to talk about that topic. I want to talk about this. So I wanted to give them a day where they can talk about anything to do with being a man and being childless. Because, as you say, it's harder for men to speak up. And sometimes you've just got to say, you know, there's a safe space here. And I've had over the years females come to me and go, I've written this about men. Can I put this on the day? Well, no, because you're given a female's perspective still. Because we can't help but put our own emotions and perspective into something. Exactly. This day is for men. I want it to be for men. Whether I get a lot of submissions or just a few, it's about focusing on men and giving them whole day. They can use the whole week. They can put a contribution in for every day of the week if they want. But it's making sure that one day they've got that freedom to voice exactly what is hurting or upsetting them, or has angered them, or where they found even the happiness and the joy now. Because it's all emotions involved. But it's, yeah, it's really important to make sure they've got that day to be seen.
And for so many reasons as well, because it's one of those things where they need to have that outlet to be able to express, both for their emotional well-being and their mental well-being as well, because you find a lot of men suffering from nervous breakdowns, and the statistics of men committing suicides higher than women, men having nervous breakdowns higher than it is in women. And so if they're not given outlets to be able to speak about the things that that's troubling them, then why are we surprised that the statistics are higher for suicide and mental health in men? We shouldn't be surprised then. So you giving men a platform to be able to do that is really great, because I think for men, like you said, they don't want to, they look at World Child this week, and again, because everybody thinks this, the problems with the women, they're probably thinking that they're just going to go somewhere and it's just going to be a bunch of women clacking on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So even if they see one male face, they're like, oh, okay. And all it takes is one guy to start speaking,
yeah,
to open the dialogue, to start the conversation, to be able to open the floodgates. And then you'd be surprised at how many come pouring through, especially based on those statistics.
Yeah. It's like, I'm happy to talk about men, but again, I don't want to give my opinion too much because it's not for me to say how a man feels. But from Michael Hughes, who does Married and Childless website, blog, and he also does his podcast as well. But he says that for him, he felt as a man, he was the one who had to be strong and support his wife. So therefore, his emotions were almost put on the back burner because he's there. And he's saying a lot of men want to be the strong, and being the strong is often bought with strong and silent partner. Yeah. So they tend to not send too much because they're trying to support their wife. And that might be fantastic for us initially, but it's not good for us or them long term, because at some point when we're sort of maybe getting over the grief, they're suddenly just starting to grieve. Do you know what I mean?
So because they haven't been able to process what they're feeling because they've been suppressing it to be there. And that's not healthy for, it's not healthy for their relationship. It's not healthy for him. Mm. It's just not healthy, because especially you could look at it and people look at, say, okay, so the woman or his partner has gone through it and then he's just starting. So, and people are like, what's wrong with you? This happened so long ago. But he's just starting his grieving process.
Exactly. Yeah. What I'll say now quickly, because obviously this is, if there's any men listening, and I really, like I said, I really want to emphasise the fact that there is support out there now. We do have a few male champions, which is wonderful. But Michael has actually started a Facebook support group just for men, just for childless men, called the Clan of Brothers. So
I do see that it's a private group for men. Yeah,
it's a private group. You'll find most support groups, I don't think I know of any that are public. Do you know what I mean? They're all sort of private, and usually you have to answer a few questions just to make sure that you do fit in with the group and who it's, you know, make sure the group's the best one for you. But to know that there's a group there specifically for men. No women allowed, I think it's wonderful that we've, you know, it's great to know we can't get in. It's brilliant to know there's a safe space for them to actually speak to other men who understand. And there's men in there who are willing to talk, because Michael's in there and there's a few other in there that I know of who are willing to talk openly, which is what they need.
Yeah, that is so true, because as we were saying, to talk about some of these kinds of things, they don't want to walk into a room filled with women and then start talking about that and sharing. They, like you said, people want to be able to, you want them to be comfortable in sharing, in expressing, in opening up. And a lot of the times that happens when they have that affinity, because they're talking to somebody that they feel can identify where they're coming from, be that a man, be that they're from the same country, be that they're from the same background, same industry sometimes even. So I fully see that and I understand that. And something that I found interesting, again, was talking about social isolation. Now, some people think that, well, how can you be socially isolated if you don't have children? You have the freedom to go anywhere, do anything, be anything you want to be. Because they would more put that down to people with children, because that's saying, well, yes, they're going to be restricted to where they can go because you can't always bring children everywhere and so on. But people don't stop to think about social isolation for those people that are childless, not by choice.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Because, again, the majority of us grow up and start a family. And when you start a family, you will automatically look for support from people who understand the situations in. And it's not a bad thing. It's not wrong. It's just that you'll automatically sort of congregate with parents at school. And I know I've heard people say, oh, there's cliques, but there's cliques everywhere.
Yes.
There are cliques everywhere, no matter the scenario. But the point is, as your children grow, you'll go to different scenarios, whether it's school, or whether it's a sports center thing, or whether it's, I don't know, some kind of school activity, mm-hmm. and you'll meet parents, you'll understand parents, and you've got a common denominator. It's why pretty much I'd say 99% of the time, one of the first questions a woman meeting you for the first time will say is, do you have kids? And it's like, you don't need to ask me, that'll come out in the first few minutes if you've got kids. You don't need to ask me that question. Mm. But it's assumed that every female has got kids.
Yeah.
And therefore, you've got that common denominator to talk about. So because you've got that common denominator of your children, you do get invited to child-based activities,
right.
or family activities, mm-hmm. and things like that. So yes, I'm not saying you can't feel isolated, but when you're childless and you can see all of your friends becoming parents, mm-hmm. you don't get invited to the children's parties because they don't necessarily think you want to go because you haven't got children.
Right, got you, of course, yeah.
Or they might go, well, yeah, why would you want to come? Why would you want to come? And it's like, well, maybe, you know, I do, because we're still friends.
Right.
I'd love to see your little child grow up. Maybe I wouldn't. Maybe it hurts me to come, but I'd like to be asked.
Mm.
That's the thing, is I like to be asked these things, but maybe sometimes we're not asked. So we sit and we watch from the sideline. We watch out the window. We watch through social media. We see all this life that we want to be part of going on around us.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, sometimes it can be self-inflicted because it's too painful to go to a baby shower. It's too painful to go to a child's party. But it's given us the choice to come. If we don't come, you might get frustrated, but just understand that sometimes there's more behind the straightforward yes or no than the excuse or the reason. But again, because there's less childless and because we don't talk out, because there's such a taboo stigma, we can't just say, hi, anybody else out there can't have kids, like to be my friend.
Yeah.
We can't ask, and because we can't ask, we don't know. And because we don't know, we don't meet people.
Of course.
So we get closed in, whereas as a family, you're having children, you're growing and you're extending your wider circle. Mm-hmm. As somebody who's childish, you're not, so you could just go inwards. And through lockdown, a lot of people say, well, it's hard to have kids. And I don't doubt it was hard to have kids if you've got to homeschool them, or if they're, you know, they're driving you around because they're bored and working from home. I do not doubt that that can be incredibly hard, frustrating, stressful, and all the negatives. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times people go, I just wish I would have had the chance to do that.
Yeah.
So while they're sort of saying, oh, well, you've got no kids. You must be sitting there having champagne cocktails for breakfast, lounging around all day, reading books.
Running around the house naked, like, no, people wear clothes in the house.
And it's like, no, it's not quite like, maybe some days it is. Maybe we've got some great days. Well, why not? If we couldn't have kids, why do we not find the happiness? And great. But for some, like I said, we can't speak for everyone, but for some, it's incredibly hard to sit there and look out the window and see you going on your daily walk with your children, looking at the rainbows in the windows, when we're sat inside the house and we can't go out because we don't want to, because we can see, you know, we're literally in a bubble that looks everybody else. So it can be, like you say, it's different for everybody depending on where they are, if they're extremely raw and deep grief, or whether they've accepted it and they're finding the perks that we can have, because there are perks.
Absolutely, there are.
But, and, you know,
and you can always send them home at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. But then again, you said, it's like some people turn around and go, you got no kids, do you want mine?
All the time. You can have this one.
Pack the suitcase. Okay. I'll take the suitcase bags, be around tomorrow, I'm a white farm, I'll collect the rail. Is that okay?
I know.
I'm not had a mum who said yes so far, but you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Quick to offer them, but the reality is, it's like, all right then, so what time tomorrow? Make sure they're ready. You know, and to your point, it is interesting, because just because you do not have children and your friends do, you're still friends. And like you were saying, you still want to share in their life. You're still happy for them. You want to see their children grow up and experience and all the rest of it and stuff. So it's actually quite funny when people start to just think, oh, well, no, she's not going to want... You haven't asked me, so how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know?
It's a bit like when you're younger and perhaps you've got all your close friends or your girlfriends, and then all of a sudden they get boyfriends. They don't want to contact you. They can't be bothered with you anymore. And then they want to, because they got dumped, they want to come back. It's like, hang on a minute, you've just ignored me for these weeks or these months and you want to come back again.
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing when you get home and you've got kids. I can't come because I'm busy with kids. And I don't say you're not busy with kids. I understand that. But if you constantly... break or stop or prevent every meeting that you're possibly going to have. And then a few months later, you're convenient, you're not available to do it that weekend because you've got something on that weekend as a childless woman. But because there are parents like, well, I'm free, but yes, but I'm not. You can't always fit in to fit with parents.
It's going to be
mutual respect. We've all got our own lives going on, as busy or as quiet as they are. And when we come together, we want that one-on-one conversation with the adult we know. The adult have got a mum of a label, same as I'm an adult of a label of childless. But it's not what makes us. We've still got our core elements of being human beings with interests and arts. Yeah. And we want to meet and connect and strengthen that, not let it fall apart.
Absolutely. That is so true. And just keeping those bonds and keeping those friendships are key. Because, like you said, I love my friends' children. Amount of them that call me auntie and all the rest of it, and I've got so many godchildren, love that. But don't think just because I don't and I can't, that means I'm now the pariah and you need to banish me.
Yeah, it is, and it can be hard. We've all got busy lives. It can be really hard to keep friendships going. But that's why we all need to work at doing that. If we respect and love somebody enough to want them in our lives, then we've got to think, okay, we've got to make time for the other person.
That is so true, and that is so key. So with all of that going on, Stephanie, and being the founder of World Childless Week, so what's next for you?
Gosh, keep it going. Keep it going. Because what I'll always say is World Childless Week, it is there throughout the year, but it's obviously we get noisier in that 1 week. But that 1 week doesn't happen without everybody else being part of it.
Right.
Because when I very first started it, I thought, crikey, is anybody going to want to join in? Or is it going to be me, writing one blog a day and hoping that a couple of people see it? Because you don't know. You've no idea when you start something new.
Yeah.
And I really thought, well, I've never written before, but I'll give it a go. And I'll just, and that's why I've decided on a theme each day to give me guidance. So I knew what I was doing because I thought I can write about each of those subjects and then look on the internet for other blogs that would relate in and pull them in on the page.
Right.
But I put it out in the support group that I run, and loads of people just said, I want to share my story. And that's how it became what it became, what it is now. And the whole point of World Child's Week is it's about all of us still wanting to share something. The wonderful thing I love is that I have people from the first year, got to be anonymous, don't want my name on there, don't want anything on there, need to change town I live in, let's make a fiction of this, because I don't want to be seen as like, you know, you will not be known. I promise everybody, you do not want your name on there, your name will not be on there. But then they come back to me and go, you know what, I want to put first name on there this year. Or they come back and they go, you know what, I want my full name on there. And they're suddenly realising they're finding their confidence to actually say, this is my story and I'm not ashamed of it anymore.
They're owning it and they're just growing into the journey that they're going, and it's the growth of how you can see the growth from anonymous, first name, full name. That's tremendous growth, and the platform that you do and offer has helped so many, I'm sure. You're in 85 countries, Stephanie, so of course.
97 this year. 97, we've gone out.
There you go, 97 countries.
I want to hit that 100-plus mark next year. I'm determined we're going to hit 100.
I'm sure you will. From 85 to 97, I'm sure you absolutely will. And so there's World Childless Week, and that's in September of every year, yeah?
Yes.
And then outside of that, you've got several Facebook groups going on. And you're writing a book, Stephanie.
Yeah, the group was actually started before World Childless Week. And it was, I was in another support group. And it was sort of said to me by my mum, why don't you write a book? I was like, okay, it's a good idea. And I sort of said, I want to do this book, but I've got no idea what I want to do. But it means it's not just me, it's everybody else. And so I started a group, and I had over 200 people come in this group with me, and I was posing questions and they were answering the questions. So I've got all this material, I've just got to find the right way to present it.
Okay.
But it's amazing because, like I said, it's not, again, it's like World Child's Week, it's not just about me and my thoughts, it's a collection of thoughts and ideas and things. And it's really interesting to hear.
Over 200 women.
how they all answer differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I've just constantly been struggling to find the best way to represent everybody who gave me their time and their emotional energy to actually participate in doing that. So my aim is I really need to knuckle down in the next year or two and get this done. I really do.
Right. And we are looking forward to being able to read it and see that, Stephanie, as well. It sounds amazing, and it sounds as though it's going to be a great resource for a lot of people who have not yet found their voice.
Well, I've found that I've had people, I've sort of like said, well, I'm thinking now because I've done all the questions stuff I've possibly, you know, I've chucking you all out, and people have gone, no, because I still look back on the answers that I gave 3 years ago and think of the answer I would give now, and it's changed, and I can see how I've moved forward. And that's what I want the book to do for people.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to use it, something they refer back to, because people say in support groups, when will the pain stop? When will I stop grieving? When will I feel happy? When will I stop crying? And we can't give answers because we're all different.
Yeah.
But I'll always say to people, you can't always tell you've moved forwards until you look backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And people have said that, again, they've referred to World Trials because they can almost see where they were this time last year and where they are now. And they can feel a difference. Perhaps they can go to a child's party, whereas last year they had to turn it down because they couldn't cope with the idea. But this year they went, I went that party and I enjoyed it.
There you go, there you go.
And that's when you tell you've moved forwards because you look backwards.
That's the growth. And that, so it will help so many people in so many different ways. Those that are able to look at it and think, wow, I have grown. I'm doing okay. I'm moving forward. And those that maybe have just started on this journey, having just discovered that they're either going to be childless, not by choice, or for whatever reason, so it can start to help them in their process of starting to heal and to move forward. Oh, this is great. So, Stephanie, where can people find you?
Best way to do it is to go through the website, which is straightforward, www.worldchildlessweek.net. And within the website, we've got all the champions on the very first page, so people can see, they can see the links to contact the champions or follow the champions. There's that instant thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can go to the community page, which has got support groups. It's got social groups, because it's not always about support, it's about being social as well with people which are different. There's bloggers on there. There's also people who are childless, who work as counsellors and therapists, or just selling the wares, because I want it to be a community where we can show everything about us. Yeah. We can sort of show, you know, we can say who we are. And like I said, childless is a little bit of it, but it's not all of us. So there's that on there. And you can see all the posts from this year and the previous year as well, in the videos. It's all there for people to keep referring back to or read at their pace, because you can't always do everything in 1 week. It's a lot of information. So emotional, so hard and strong and impactful, some of it, that you can't read or look at all in 1 week.
Okay.
It's the thing of feeling in your safe spot, in your safe space, being mentally prepared. So I'm going to read some stories from that section today.
Mm-hmm.
Do it in your own spot. But yeah, so that lists where you can, it's literally like a network. Go to worldchildlessweek.net. And you can hopefully find a lot of things branching out from that, which is what I want it to be.
Great stuff. And that's www.worldchildlessweek.net.
Yes.
Excellent. Stephanie, it's been an absolute pleasure. I have loved our time together today. Thank you so much. And I'm really looking forward to when the book comes out. Please keep us updated.
I will. No, it's been great chatting, and I think we could have probably chatted all day long.
I know, because, right?
As I said, there's just so much to say. It's really hard to sometimes keep to the subject because everything leads to something else.
But see, the thing is, this is the beauty of it, because guess what? You may have to come back for a part two, Stephanie.
Sounds good to me. Happy to chat, as you can tell.
Great. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you, Alison. It's been really lovely to chat.
Thank you. Take care now.
Thank you for spending time with us. We're already looking forward to the next episode of This is Conversations with Alison J. The journey to here. Until next time, honor, respect, and blessings to you all. If you want to connect, visit AlisonJ.net. That's AlisonJaye.net. Allison with one L, as she is the one and only